This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end, no safety.
You're tuned to the Truth Channel, Truth News Radio Australia, Thursday, the 4th of March, 2010. And I'm just trying out some new theme music for the show. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we have an absolute mountain of material to get through. So please bear with us. We'll try to do our best to bring it to you in a measured and sensible way. I'd just like at this point to welcome Josh Jackson back to the show.
Harrowood, how are you, Sonny Jim?
Look, as always, I'm just, you know, fantastic, really. I couldn't be better if I tried.
And I think it's the end of the New World Order.
This is the end, my friend.
Yeah.
Of their elaborate plans.
Yeah, I think we're breaking on through to the other side.
It's just the beginning of our elaborate plans, if I might add.
Yeah, absolutely.
As the final play of this decaying, corrupt, decrepit old world order, which is really what it is. It's really the old world order. It's not the new world order. As it decays, as it sinks into the flames and ruination of its own inherent corruption, new sweetness, a new life is starting to emerge in the form of liberty, in the form of like people waking up again to the sweetness of the taste of liberty, you know, because we've been denied it for thousands of years, you realize. For thousands of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if, you know, more and more people actually understand the concept of the Austrian School of Economics, which is, you know, more based on liberty of and freedom than the Keynesian, which is all because of this this open, total greed of using, you know, taxpayer money to basically steal off the people to then pay out big banking and the old new world, the old order, you know, of the elite banking cartels and like Goldman Sachs and such.
The twisted web of control that actually goes back, to my mind, thousands of years.
Absolutely.
It feeds back into a despotic system from which we are liberating ourselves, as I see it. And it's true liberation. You know, and with each phase of the discoveries of new technology, of you know, the awakening of the abilities of human beings, we have actually progressively
And I'd like ourselves. To just put something out there. I'd like to thank the internet. I'd like to thank the network that brings knowledge together to anyone, to allow anybody to have a channel where millions of people can view something in a moment, where you can find out how to build a solar panel for free, where you can find out how to network with other engineers and figure out new ways of doing things, how you can get something off of WikiLeaks and that some corruption has happened and spread it so everybody knows and highlights the disgusting corruption in the world. I think the internet is the reason why we're winning such a battle for the hearts and minds of the ordinary people. And now it is under attack itself because they realize that the internet is down, and we'll cover that later in the show because it is definitely getting down to you know, the government's putting on its battle gear. Rudd's stated that he will make no excuses for the filter for an apology. But let's quickly do a rundown of the week's
let's do
the week's
that.
Headlines let's, on the Twitter feed.
Let's do that. We'll just feed you into that with a little bit of tinsel-y music. Okay, first off the rank, Israel passports probe a waste of money. Now, very quickly, what I want to point out here, and this story was only posted minutes ago, this is from the Israeli government, and what they've said is, this is incredible. Okay, they're telling the Australian Federal Police, because the Australian Federal Police have sent a team over to Israel to find out why the hell Mossad is forging Australian parts. They've got a factory over there that just makes passports and then commits terrorist acts with those fake forged identities. I mean, not one crime, two crimes. One crime, the crime of stealing and forging a passport, which is a massive crime for which you would go to prison for probably 20 years in this country. The second crime being, of course, running around killing people. Extrajudiciary.
Yeah, which is a life sentence.
But, indeed.
You know, like, why? Why is a state allowed to do it and a person not? So, you know, big questions there. Absolutely. Next cab off the rank is there. The Pirate Party attacks Lundy's, is it?
Lundy's filter Lundy's option. Filter yes, option. She's a parliament.
She's a Labour Party MP. Senator, Kate yes. Lundy.
Or MP, perhaps, yeah.
She's proposed some sort of opt-out amendment for the internet filter, and the Pirate Party is saying this is just censorship light, and it's progression basically.
Yes, what they've done is what she has proposed. I think she's a senator. We'll clarify that later. What she has proposed is that we should go ahead with the filter, but we basically give the user the chance to opt out. Now, this is censorship light. This is really dangerous because basically once you do that, once you put all the infrastructure in place, it's very easy for them to then change the settings to make it mandatory. Like it'd just be a flick of a switch, literally. So,
oh, absolutely. They'll just say, yeah. We busted this pedophile and he opted out of the filter. So now we are going to make everybody.
Yeah, too dangerous to have the opt-out. We'll have to make the opt-out opted in.
Well, yeah.
Okay, next story. Oh, sorry.
No, go for it.
Yes, well, leading on from that, we have Rudd, we won't apologise for filter. Now, this is from last week, and our fearless leader, Kevin Rudd, has come out, in a fighting mode, standing up for his glorious plan. Mm. And he basically pointed to the refused classification material the filter aims to block. What does it involve? Acts of child abuse. Acts of sexual abuse against children, including material which also provides how-to kits in terms of conducting terrorist acts. I think this stuff is filthy. I can't stand it. I think these are the right measures. You're running a business. We're pro-internet. This is what he said to the ISPs. But we don't make apologies for this. There should be a little puppet. We should have a little Rudd puppet that we could juggle and make him say really idiotic things like that. Now, just very quickly, what I'll point out is this. Well, yes, pedophiles are absolutely hideous. Oh my God, let's ban pedophiles. Let's ban anything about pedophiles. But gee, there's a lot of other things that are bad too. What about racist statements? Oh, they're bad too. Hate speech. Oh gee, that's bad. What about instructions on how to burn down houses or how to make bombs or people who hate women or people who hate, who drive Ferraris or, yeah. You know, what about... Just what about antisocial people? What about bullying? What about the terrible things people do on blogs where they bully each other? Oh my God, we better ban that. Gee, what about people who deny things that we all know are true and real, like, you know, climate change? Because we know climate change is very important, and people who deny climate change, gee, they're just like Holocaust. Oh, by the way, we better ban Holocaust deniers. And gee, what about this?
Let me just interject.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to elaborate on this. And see, what we have here is we had a... we had the media organizations, the media industry, the industrial media industry, suing iiNet later, earlier on the month. Of course, iiNet said, hey, we cannot control every one of our internet users because it's impossible. It's impossible. You cannot do it, right? So, and they don't want to, of course, because it's intrusion in privacy and all the rest of it. Now, what happens when, let's say, 911oz.com.au.
Great site.
Says, gets banned because somebody writes something on there which is inappropriate, maybe, you know, some sort of racial slur, which, you know, the administrators of that site definitely try to get rid of as much as possible, but it's near impossible to do because there's a lot of members on that site. There's thousands of members on that site posting stuff constantly. It's near impossible to filter out all racists. But under some sort of a filtering system, the government's robots or whatever will happen, however they do this, will see, right, this is against the thing, ban, boom, gone. The site will be off the air. You won't know how to do it. You'll just get some sort of email or letter in the post saying, you have been banned for this, for racial vilification, and that's it. And then you'll spend maybe, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, 10 months trying to get back online. Meanwhile, your Google ranking is down the drain. The damage is done. It is impossible to... So what a filter actually does is destroy Web 2.0, meaning it destroys the concept of people creating the internet.
Which, by the way, is a new thing that we only discovered and invented for ourselves 15 or so years ago, okay? It didn't exist before, right?
Even less.
So,
true Web 2.0 only came out with the Ajax technologies with...
Web 2.0, indeed, yes. Yeah, well,
where the web is, things like Facebook, where people are actually creating the internet, where you know, Blogspot, where people can just go in and easily create something. Now... The thing is, the internet is so amazing that what will actually happen is everyone will just get around all this anyway, because information will just find new ways. Instead, someone will develop some sort of dynamic IP thing where it'll just move the information to something else, and you'll get mirror sites and all this. But it's almost impossible to block this stuff. But what it does is sets up a precedent in people's minds that the government is allowed to go around saying this isn't readable, that isn't readable, and all sorts of stuff. And it really is a disgusting. And I just cannot believe that people are actually taking this guy seriously.
Look, I have to give you my take on this now, Josh. Here is what I suddenly had a revelation today. I really suddenly saw it.
Bring it on.
So clearly. Because the government has been using this cheeky little argument for quite a while now, and they've been getting a lot of mileage out of it. What they say is this. They say, oh, you know, there are regulations for forms of media that already exist. And, gee, the internet has been unregulated all this time. You know, it's been like a cowboy zone, you know, just frontier land. People are just doing ridiculous things. It needs to be regulated. And they point back to, you know, the regulation of television and radio as, you know, a touchstone, as a benchmark of what we need to do with the internet. Well, let me just actually deconstruct that point of view. First of all, let me point out that media in this country is totally monopolized, totally centralized in the hands of a few mega corporations headed by disgustingly rich people who basically control and decide for us everything that we should see through those media. And we, basically the people, have Buckley's chance of getting information about things that we know are really, really important, like the collapse of World Trade Building 7, the facts about climate change, the facts about vaccines and how they're killing and, you know, causing autism in children, the facts about genetically modified foods.
How dare you say that?
Well, indeed.
And
one can use phrases like hate speech to demonize anything that one considers hateful to one's, you know, plans. Of course.
And look, folks, maybe you think, oh, look, the Rudd government would never do that. It's not going to happen. What happens is the infrastructure gets set up.
Oh no, they've said they will. They've said they will.
Yeah.
They've said that they will.
But even if people believe, no, I really, Rudd is a good Christian man and he shall never do anything bad and all this.
Yes.
But what happens is future governments have also the ability to do this. And I've seen in forums, oh, we should have voted Liberal. I can't believe I voted for Rudd. They would do the exact same filter.
I agree with you.
Talking about it.
In fact, even if we had the most perfect society on earth, with angels, you know, who basically administered everything, I would still be against this filter. But in addition to the fact that there is this potential for some dark future chapter, but of course, you know, they always say when you say that, oh, you're a paranoid conspiracy theorist. Okay, so let's just talk about what they have actually said they are going to do. Okay, this is not an imaginary thing in the future.
No, no.
This is what they are going to do. They have said they are going to crack down on racism and hate speech. Now, I've got quite a few articles on it, which are actually in the Twitter stream. And since we're actually on the Twitter stream
right
now.
And I, for one, can't stand racism. I cannot stand it. I'm not. You know, one thing that really does my head in about this whole the whole 9/11 movement is there is a lot of crackpots who just go around going Jew, 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 and it's really aggravating.
Absolutely,
Because I mean, it's just blaming a whole group of people who, just quite frankly, it's ridiculous to just blame a group, and so you know, no one is for racism here and saying, oh, we want to be racist, don't put the filter on. You know, it's ridiculous.
Now, let's just look at this article that was published on February 21, Law to Take Action on Internet Racism. Laws to tackle racism on the internet are set to be beefed up. Authorities warn that they are often powerless to act against online content, which is responsible for almost 1 in 5 racial vilification complaints. Attorney General Robert McClelland has ordered the Australian Human Rights Commission to conduct a sweeping review of arrangements for dealing with racist material on the internet. Quote here, while freedom of expression is one of the most fundamental rights, this is not at the expense of the rights of people while using the internet to be treated with equality, dignity and respect. Mr. McClelland said that the government was exploring what action it could take on internet material that breaches the Federal Racial Discrimination Act. Now, let's just be very clear.
Oh, yeah,
here.
Because
at
the government
point,
really care about racism. I mean, they go over there and they kill brown people in other countries with taxpayers' money. They go and, you know, kill anyone with another sort of color on their skin. They bomb farmers in Afghanistan. They, you know, they run black ops all over the world. Oh, yeah, they really care if you, you know.
Now, let's just be clear. Let's just be clear for now. The government is actually saying, is not saying, and you'll look at their statements, and I encourage everyone to do this. Don't just take my word for it. Look at their actual statements. Look at what Conroy has said. Look at what Rudd has said. Neither of them are saying that they intend to put racist sites on the blacklist. But here we have a statement from the Attorney General saying the government was exploring what action it could take on internet material that breaches the Federal Racial Discrimination Act. I am trying to piece together here so you can see the jigsaw puzzle and connect the dots as to what will happen. Because as soon as they put the internet ISP filter in, do you think that they're not going to, in the light of these terrible problems with racism on the internet, do you really think that they're not going to add racist sites to the internet? Do you really think that?
But it's not even that. It's not even that.
Well, no, that's
Conroy,
the point.
Conroy recently took out and censored the word internet filter or something. What was the exact phrase, Harold?
Well, I'll get to that in a minute. I just want to finish this point because I really do believe that what I'm saying here is actually quite important in and of itself.
It is, okay.
Because we can run away with things and then we sort of forget that what we're trying to establish here, right, is that the government will actually bring in a filter that will, in due course, based on these statements they've made, almost certainly be extended beyond what they've said, which is child pornography and, you know, tips on how to make bombs. That's what they've said they're going to put in the filter, okay? So yes, we now have to face the fact that yes, well, you know, on a standard way of looking at things, on a level playing field, hate speech is just as evil as pedophilia. You know, they both can lead to terrible crimes. You know, they're both travesties of human behavior. So there is actually no justification for only blocking pedophilia and not blocking racial hate speech, is there? No justification for it all. If you're going to block one, you might as well block the other.
And block it all. And, you know, also, when the Pope comes, you better block any reference to condoms.
Exactly. And so once you realize that, so first of all, you got to understand that this filter is going to have things extended to it. There's also the precedent that they've already said that this international list called the IWF list, which is actually used in the UK, it's a global list of banned blacklist sites, will be added to the government site. Now, this is not even compiled in Australia. We just get it. They just send it to us. Okay. So whatever they decide needs to go on their list will just go on our list as well.
Okay, and folks, I'd just like to quickly add in there, if this was an easy thing to do, they would have just done it, right? It's a very difficult thing to do. It's a very expensive thing to do. So it takes all this sort of procedure. That's why we have got to stop it, because first they say, oh, it's only for this and this. If it's only for this and this, they wouldn't spend billions of dollars doing it. It is a very, very expensive thing, and it's to control you. That's why Conroy took out that single word, is because of control of information.
And last point in my dot connection here, trying to get to the punchline here, because once they establish that they can ban racist sites and racial hate speech, the concepts behind what the definition of hate speech are much more loose. They're much more plastic and pliable than the concept of what kiddie porn is. I mean, everyone knows what kiddie porn is, right? It's not that ambiguous, right? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's pretty straightforward. But
yeah.
But there is a lot of grey areas between, say, criticising of Israel versus being anti-Semitic. Between wanting to have a look at historical events from a fresh perspective, or basically undermining... or justifying crimes against humanity, which they say, you know, Holocaust revisionism is justifying the evil crimes of the Nazis, therefore it is a crime in itself. However, if a professor wants to look into the history of something and wants to say, well, you know, I'm a researcher, I did this research, there's a major argument there for free speech that should not actually be criminalized. But we've already gone several steps beyond that in several countries, like Germany, which has basically just decided, well, that's totally criminal. So the precedents have already been set for people who question the view of history, which is the predominant view, to be considered criminal. And the language has been used to tar people with the same brush who question things like 9/11. People who say, well, we think there's evidence that 9/11 was an inside job. Now, if someone says that, that can be construed as hate speech because it implies that the government did it and that you hate the government, you know, that you must hate the government, and it will incite people to hate the government. The argument is very clear. And so as soon as we get into this other material, and we will inevitably get into this other material, it is inevitable that it will extend into suppression of many, many things that we consider to be the most important issues of our time that we need to speak out, and that we only have the internet to speak out on them, because they never get addressed in the mainstream news. They stay completely buried because the corporatist controlled media have suppressed and criminally controlled the discourse.
Look, absolutely great points, Harold, and I think the key to this, to what you're saying here, as in terms of just an example of how they will use filtering to manipulate people, is by looking at what Conroy just filtered out of his own website.
Yes. Yeah. It's a, so, It's so a corker, that one. It's a real corker.
Conroy has a little widget on his website, which basically looks at keywords. It's called a tag cloud. Correct me if I'm wrong here. It's a tag cloud. It basically, any word that gets, say if a word's repeated three times, the word gets a little bigger. So there's a whole bunch of words on the side of the page. You know, might be internet, might be, because internet was mentioned 30 times, it's quite fat and big. So you click on it and then a search will come up with any word.
The tag cloud is usually driven by what people are searching on. So the more searches there are on a particular term, the more it will pop up. That's one of the ways the tag cloud can work. So if a lot of people are searching on ISP filter, the word ISP filter will get bigger and bigger.
Yeah. So then you see this big ISP filter. Now, what did Conroy do? He took this code and he basically censored the word internet filter. So no matter how many people searched it, it wouldn't pop up in the cloud. Now, what is that? Is that pornography? Is that hate speech? No, it's controlling and manipulating people to not actually find what they're looking for on a government site. If that doesn't scream out to you a prelude of what is going to happen once you allow, because it is you and I that will allow this, it's not the government. We say what we stand for, apparently, but we do, because, you know, most of us, I mean, I try to a lot, will stand up and have some, be active, but a lot of people don't. So it's so important to get active and really, you know, come out and be supportive. Join the Pirate Party. Be one of those founding members. It's free now. Go to pirateparty.com.au. Is it .com.au?
You've caught me out there. I'm not sure. Anyway, just put it into Google, the Pirate Party. You'll find it.
Australian Pirate Party.
Australian Pirate Party.
Join now. Join now. It is so important. Join them right now.
Join them right now and make sure, if you're in Sydney, try to get to the day out on Saturday. I know it's a little bit awkward. I don't know why they're doing it in Parramatta. It's a bit of a disappointment, actually. They're running this internet protest out in Parramatta.
It's not really a protest either.
It's actually a picnic.
Yeah, I think it's a get together to talk and chat and discuss.
But look, we will be there. Truth News will be there. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll be there with cameras. We'll be wearing our T-shirts. If you're getting this podcast and you want to get out there, please come out and join us. And I'm actually looking for people to help me with the camera and the audio. And one thing that I'm going to say now, and I'm going to say this in the future for Truth News events that I run, is that anyone who turns up to help me and really helps me, like is there on time and will actually hold the camera and do these things, will get a free T-shirt. Because I really need people to help to do Truth News events in the real world, out in the field. Because it's not enough for us just to sit here, you know, behind a computer screen on the mic, as great as it is. We need to get out there in the field. But in order to do that, we actually need more people to assist. So my standing offer is for anyone who actually wants to get out there, free T-shirt. I know it's not much, but, you know, I'd love to be able to pay people, actually. You know, I'd love to be able to do that.
You pay people because people want to do it. You know, there's no
exactly.
point.
Yeah.
You know, we're not, you know, we can't afford it. We can't afford to pay people, but what we can, we know that there's hundreds of thousands of people listening to these sorts of shows.
Absolutely.
And they have the same sort of passion we do. We just want you to get turn the computer off and do some actions. Now, one last thing I'd just like to go back to, how you were, your comment on the television stations, how he was saying, oh, we've got to regulate it back to, you know, the rest of the media, how the media is regulated. Now, hey, you were saying the media is owned by five corporations. Very true. Now, how are they that moral? I mean, I turn on the television, all I see is, you won't believe how this person gets murdered. The sick, disgusting way he gets killed.
Yeah.
Like, it's just constant promo after promo of death and destruction and CSI after CSI after CSI Miami, CSI New York, CSI... you know, Hawaii. I don't. You know, it just goes on and on.
And then during the commercial breaks, there'll be. Do you have problems getting or maintaining an erection? or even something more contemptuous than that. Some guy, trying to play the piano with his penis. I've seen that one. You've seen that one?
And then
a man trying to play the piano with his penis.
Yeah, trying to making every guy feel absolutely worthless if they can't get it up, and then you get dial 1-300 sex after 12 o'clock. Then you get but it's the prime time stuff. I mean, you wake up at 6 a.m. And you turn on the TV. That's usually when the kids shows are on, the cartoons. Instead, you get these music clips that are just so pornographic. They're absolutely just women gyrating in tiny little outfits. Being a hot-blooded man, I'm not saying I'm totally against that, but
absolutely,
it's not the most moral of places. And
for decades and decades and decades, they were making people smoke, using all the psychological power of advertising to make people smoke cigarettes, which they knew was killing people, and they knew that for decades. And
absolutely,
they all collaborated in it, and now they're punishing people for smoking. And now it's all about punishing people for smoking after creating a generation of addicts. And then we're told we have this wonderful system of regulation, and all we've got to do is just extend that to the internet, Josh, because the internet is this terrible, unregulated place now where terrible, terrible travesties can occur. As much as we love free speech, it just has to be regulated.
And do you know what I'm noticing right now, Herod, is this onslaught. Every day on the news, there is a story about cyberbullying or, these kids got expelled from school because they all bullied the teacher on Facebook, or some kid got heaps of people are getting, watch out for ripoff artists on eBay, all these sort of stories. Literally every day I turn on the TV, it's some story about being ripped off online. Now, I don't say that doesn't happen. Of course that happens. Of course people get ripped off online. It happens every day. It happens more than ever. Hackers always, identity theft, all sorts of stories every day. It's really ramped up lately. In the last couple of weeks, I've noticed every single day, at least two stories in the news or in A Current Affair or Today Tonight, I'm seeing this real amplification of these fear stories. Now, why just suddenly? They have always been around. As soon as eBay opened their doors, some rortster put up a lawnmower and then didn't send it. It's always happened. Rort and stuff like that has always happened online. It's not a problem with the internet. And straight away, they're going up to the Prime Minister. What are you going to do about it? Because they do these big fear stories, and then they go up to the Prime Minister and say, what are you going to do? And he of course says, well, we're thinking about getting an online ombudsman in place. And this is just more regulation to control the net and to control you and me. Now, how do you defeat fraudsters? The private industry will always try to defeat fraudsters. eBay is trying very hard, and it's about education. It's about education. You don't just go online and buy a $10,000 ring on eBay with a person that's got 1-star rating. You just don't. Otherwise, you're a fool. And if you're that much of a fool, I'm sorry, but you kind of deserve to be ripped off because you really haven't done your study. Because it happens. And don't ruin the rest of the net by asking Prime Minister Rudd to insert some government regulation because you're too much of an idiot.
Absolutely. Look, let's take a program break.
Bring it on.
I'm going to play you some Bob Dylan here. Chimes of Freedom. This is from a live performance, 1965.
Far between the finish sundown and midnight's broken toll, we ducked inside the doorways, thunder went crashing, as majestic bells of bolts struck shadows in the sounds, seeming to be the chimes of freedom flashing, flashing for the warriors whose strength is not to fight, flashing for the refugees on the unarmed road of flight, and for each and every underdog soldier in the night. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Through the city's melting furnace, unexpectedly we watched, with faces hidden as the walls were tightening, as the echo of the wedding bells before the blowing rain dissolved in calling for the rebel, calling for the rig, calling for the luckless, the abandoned and forsake, calling for the outcast, burning constantly at stake. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Mad mystic hammering of the wild ripping hail, the sky cracked its palms in naked wonder at the clinging of the church bells, blew far into the night, leaving only bills of lightning and its thunder. Striking for the gentle, striking for the kind, striking for the guardians and protectors of the mind, and the poet and the painter who lights up his rightful time. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Wild cathedral evening, the rain unraveled tales, for the disrobed faceless forms of no position, tolling for the tongues with no place to bring their thoughts, all down in taken for granted situations. Tolling for the deaf and blind, tolling for the mute, for the mistreated mateless mother, the mistitled prostitute, for the misdemeanor outlaw, chained and cheated by pursuit. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. For the searching on their speechless seeking trail for the lonesome hearted lovers with two personal a tale. And for each unharmful gentle soul misplaced inside a jail, and we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing. Starry-eyed and laughing as I recall when we were caught, trapped by no track of ours, for they hang suspended. As we listened one last time and we watched with one last look, spellbound and swallowed till the tolling ended. Calling for the aching ones whose wounds cannot be nursed, for the countless confused accused misused strung out ones and worse, and for every hung up person in the whole wide universe. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.
You're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, you're back with Truth News Radio Australia, Harold and Josh, and we are trying to get through a mountain of material.
Yeah, these boots are starting to hurt.
Yeah.
These trekking boots.
Yeah, we're trekking.
I've got my rope to try to get down the mountain again.
I mean, every week, you know, it builds up. It builds up this sort of layer upon layer of stuff. And no one's, if we don't deal with it, who is? You know, we live in this great country, this great continent. I think Australia is a fantastic place, by the way. I think it is actually one of the most free places in the world. Even so, it's really bad, okay? It's paradoxical. I think that we are actually in a position here to have a quality of life and real freedom that very few people are even come close to, okay? Because there are so many obstacles. Imagine in India, imagine in China, imagine in most of the world. We actually have a crack at it here. But we have this other problem of people having been, their brains having been just soaked in mind-numbing propaganda and brainwashing for their whole lives. So that despite the fact that they've got this ability to be free, they're not free inside. You know, and it's a tragedy because the opportunity is there. Then again, we have so many people, and I see this on the blogs, because I always look at the blogs, I always look at the comments on major news sites, and I see thousands of people, pretty sharp too.
Look, pretty folks, sharp. You are free to do as I say, basically.
Yeah, yeah. There's that side to it.
That's the sort of vibe. Now, getting back to our wonderful Twitter feed.
Yeah,
here.
Let's
That's,
just hoe back in.
Twitter.com/truthnews.
Dig the shovel back in and start shoveling.
Yeah, the Twitter.com/truthnewsoz. Really important little thing. Sign up and follow our Twitter feed. It's a really good little resource. And if you don't do Twitter, then just subscribe to the RSS feed of our Twitter feed, and maybe put it on your Google homepage or. Or your
Look, I've been a bit lax. I've been a bit lax, I have to admit. I haven't created a fan page on Facebook. I currently post our shows on my own Facebook account. I'm going to get a fan page on Facebook up.
So yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
We literally have now hundreds and hundreds of listeners, so
oh, look,
it's amazing the stats keep growing.
We've got dedicated listeners. We've got there's a guy who contacted me a few days ago, and I'm going to be getting back to him, and pardon me if I've forgotten your name as we speak, but a commercial fisherman in Australia has said that he's going to paint www.truthnews.com.au on his boat. And you know,
that?
You are gold. You know, you're getting a T-shirt, and you know,
gone down there. Yeah, folks.
Yeah, look, you're getting a free T-shirt,
can
mate.
Market us in any way. Let us know. Take a picture of it. You know, chalk it somewhere on some street, or you know,
chalk it. Chalk
or
the
do
streets.
Something that's not against the law to promote us. You know, tell your friends, email it out, or scream it from the top of the streets.
Now, I've got a little plan for Truth News. Just to have these different ideas that come and go, but I think this one, I'm going to roll ahead with this one. We want to start doing Truth News public events, right? Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to set up somewhere in the city, maybe in Hyde Park, or you know, a place where there's a fair amount of people, and we'll do it around lunchtime, and we'll have like a Vox Pop theme of the week, right? And we'll work out our questions. We'll get our theme right. We'll get it scripted nicely, and we'll have our little team there. And we'll basically we'll all be wearing the Truth News T-shirts. And what we'll do is we'll ask passers-by a set of questions related to an important issue. For example, the internet filter, climate change, you name it. You know, we'll do different themes. We'll film it. We'll also put it on the radio show. And this is actually a combination of news gathering as well as bringing the information to the people, as well as actually reaching out. And I think it's something that we can do on a, you know, pretty shoestring budget if we think about it.
Also, I think that's a fantastic idea, Harold. I think it it gets out there on the streets. It then, you know, multiplies that concept by sticking it online. It's fantastic. Another thing, people, look, you know, if any of our listeners are sitting there and they'd like to contribute to the show, you know, a simple thing they could do is stick a, you know, on a weekly bay or whenever the show comes out, just, you know, stick it on YouTube. Put an image or make a little collage of images or just one image and just stick it up there, you know, get people watching the show by listening to it.
Yeah, great. If someone wants to create a YouTube channel for us, you know, go for it, you know. Just go for it. Just take our MP3 files and upload them. I don't have time to do it. If someone else did it, that would be absolutely superb. I would love you. I'll send you a T-shirt. Okay. This is what I'm
awesome.
Saying.
Awesome. You're going T-shirt mad.
Yeah, I'm going crazy with the T-shirts.
Harold's lost his mind, everybody. He's just throwing T-shirts willy-nilly.
It's all I got to give.
Now, back to the headlines of the week. Australian government bans Wrens.com.
Okay, well, this is
now classified as a racist and hate speech site.
Yeah,
the Wrens.com is sort of on the InfoWars style conspiracy circles.
It's not one of my favorite websites, I have to say. You go there, it's full of ads. It's got like half a page of ads.
It's really nasty.
It's tacky.
When I say nasty, it just looks horrible.
It is really, really one of the tackiest sites.
Design. Good information.
There's some really good information. There's also bad information there.
There's also a lot of crud on there. Yeah. But look, the fact is, it's another thing. And actually, I went and I had a look at Wrens.com to see if it's banned, if I'm banned, because they made it sound like it's just banned. But it turns out, I think it's just banned if you're in the Australian government looking from it.
They've put it on their filter. Again, this gets back to the racial issues, because there's stuff on there about Holocaust revisionism. And I'd say that would be the reason, because most of the other stuff on Rents is like there's UFOs and, you know, a lot of stuff there that I don't think they'd ban. I don't think they're going to ban UFOs. But I do think that the Holocaust revisionism, you know, that'll be a trigger. And, you know, it's a problematic area, isn't it? You know, but that's free speech, you know, is problematic.
Look,
we love
part
it.
Of living in a free society yeah. is to be totally offended.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I get offended all the time living in a free society because some punk is allowed to say that, you know, I shouldn't be allowed to wear condoms.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because they're, you know, that's their view, a religious view. And I mean, that's kind of offensive to me. But I put up with it because I'm free and he's free and she's free to say as they want. And that's just how it is. The internet, I mean, sometimes an image pops up of some something that's offensive. And I have to say, wow.
That's part of living in a civil society. That's what happens, you know.
Geed off, I'm not going there again because that really offended me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just get over it, folks. It's offensive. Part of being offended is being free.
Absolutely. Now, I just want to move on. Just quickly cover this next story. Bloggers beware, bad ads can come back to you. This is not really part of our normal theme that I cover, but I just want to mention it because in case there's people out there that have blogs, there's a certain type of spam going around at the moment, which is actually quite deceptive, and I was nearly sucked in by it. What you'll get is an email from an advertiser saying that they want to put an ad on your page and they're offering you money. And it is real. It is a real company. And thousands of people with small blogs are getting these emails. But it is really, really dangerous, folks. What actually can happen is these ads are actually usually ads that link to either things like casinos or things that are, you know, I mean, if you've got a serious blog, you don't really want things that are going to like, you know, party poker or casinos or porn sites. That's one problem. But another problem is that these ads actually can link to other pages that are like link farm pages. And what can happen is you might have a blog that's moderately successful and you put these ads on it. Suddenly Google will actually blacklist your site because you're linking to link farm sites, which they then use as a pretext to say, well, you're transgressing our rules. You know, we have basic rules about advertising and you've transgressed that. So then they can de-index you. So it's just a warning.
I mean, this is part of the scam, right? And this is part of internet scamming. And this is where education comes in, not ban, quick, get government ombudsman out there. I mean,
you know, you get a government ombudsman,
what do? You start putting stuff in people's roofs and killing people, you know? And that's how when the government gets involved, people just end up dying. I mean, let's just face it. You know,
don't get me started on the electrified roofs. Don't get me started on the electrified roofs. We haven't even, you know.
We haven't even covered that. But just to add to what you're saying, right? Yeah. This is an offline thing, which is very similar. It's another scam.
Yeah.
Basically, it's in a trashy women's magazine that my girlfriend, you know, happened to, in a hairdresser or something, it fell out. It's a scratchy. It's this great big scratchy. It's about 15 centimeters by 15 centimeters big. It's a big square. And it says, win $1 million and scratch three symbols and you've won. And, of course, you know, you scratch the symbols. There it is. Three stars. Boom, boom, boom. And and then you win written on the when you scratch it. You win. Code. Three. It all looks totally legit. All these prizes, pictures of Xboxes and money and stuff. Then if you read the fine, and she was very close, she was so excited. It was like, wow, I've won something far out. So she goes to almost ring. Then she looks at the fine print. By ringing this, you are purchasing Lifestyle Fund mobile access for 1 month at a cost of $19.80.
Okay, right.
So, wow. You know, I mean, these sort of scams are all over the place, whether they're online or offline. And to, you know, to then set up big internet filters is just an excuse because these scams are everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, as long as there are people, as long as there are, you know, as long as there is a world with people in it, there will be people who try to, you know, play tricks.
Scam you. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, back to the old list here. We've got Head in the Sand, Warmest Propaganda from The Guardian sweeps climate science fraud under the rug. This is Soviet style.
Well, yes. Now, the point of this article, the point of this tweet really was to illustrate the mindset of those who basically are, well, they're really paid. They're really paid opinion. They're not. It's just basically so-called journalists who are actually just in the pay of their masters, who tell them, you know, what they have to do. And
well, just to add to that, see, sometimes it's not that simple. It's not like, oh, it's some conspiracy. He's getting paid by some master in a shadowy cloak. It's actually he's been paid by the garbage. His job is he reports on the environment, and a lot of the environment journalisms are paid to basically go and get stories about climate change because it's fear and it gets people reading, and it's, and you know, that is a whole job. Oh, what sort of journalist are you? Because there's all sorts of journalists. There's a sports journalists, there's beauty, there's money journalists, there's environmental and climate change journalists now. It's a whole industry.
Now, let me just read you the paragraph here from the beginning of this article. Is the science of climate change fatally flawed by the ClimateGate revelations? Absolutely not. Nothing uncovered in the emails destroys the argument that humans are warming the planet. None of the 1,073 emails, raw data and computer code upsets the 200-year-old science behind the greenhouse effect of gases such as carbon dioxide. And we know the world is warming. Thousands of thermometers in areas remote from any conceivable local urban influences tell us that. The oceans are warming too. Okay, so here is a journalist, not a scientist, a journalist, telling you, by the way, warming is real, okay, Josh? Global warming is real. It's caused by humans. Okay? Okay, Josh? Just shut up, okay? Forget about ClimateGate. Whatever happened, just, it's not true, okay? Global warming is real. And this is the tone that you get. And I've been following it. There's a lot of stuff that's coming out in the media that has this tone in it. It's like your father just saying, now listen here, sonny, right? And it doesn't matter that the sportsmaster is a pedophile, okay? You just go and do your lessons, okay? And, you know, and even if the sportsmaster is a pedophile, it doesn't matter, okay? I'm just, you know, sorry. It's a probably bad analogy, but I'm just getting a bit carried away with that theme there of the, you know, the authoritarian father, and just basically you're being told, you know, and there's all this evidence that there's this corruption and lies, right? And yet we also get this from the BBC. We also get this from the ABC. They say, well, you know, yes, there was all this terrible behavior and that there was breaches of scientific procedure, you know, but it's all still true. None of this led to any false information. Everything about global warming is still true, despite the fact that there was malpractice, lying, actual criminal behavior. You know, still the science is perfectly solid.
Yeah, I mean,
come on.
The whole a lot of the big climate change, the ClimateGate, you know, controversy is based around some of the emails that are saying what's the best way of hiding the decline. You know, when it comes to some of these proxy theories that
oh my god, hiding the decline. I just have to point out that has been totally explained now in this video from the House of Commons inquiry into ClimateGate. The question of what did hide the decline mean is no longer a question for debate. Okay, so don't let anyone tell you what that really meant, because it has now been explained by the people who wrote those words. Okay. And they did try to hide the decline, okay? Now, what has been debated and what has actually been accepted, even by people like Steve McIntyre and the skeptics, is that the word trick is not to be, you know, used as evidence against them. We can let them have their trick and say, well, a trick is something that can have all kinds of meanings. What we're more concerned about is that they wanted to hide something, okay? So it's a lot of talks gone around this, and they said, "Oh well, you know, the global warming skeptics said it was a trick, and a trick just means a scientific technique." Yes, but what was that scientific technique? It wasn't a scientific technique. It was just a technique of illustrating a graph in such a way that certain of the parts of that graph were hidden by other things on top of those parts of the graph. And what was hidden? I'll tell you exactly what was hidden: the tree ring data, which does not correlate with temperature data taken by thermometers after 1960. The tree ring data and the temperature data completely diverges. And anyone with any sense, any common sense, would understand that that throws a lot of doubt on the validity of the tree ring data itself, because we have clear evidence that the thermometer readings and the tree ring data wildly diverge after 1960. But they want us to believe that the tree ring data before 1960 is totally reliable. Yeah. And that's why they wanted to hide it.
Mm. Mm. And then you get the satellite tropospherical data that is considerably less than the ground data sets as well.
Yes, the atmospheric data from the satellites does not match with the temperature data from the ground. Yeah. And guess what they did?
The University of Alabama sets.
They wrote a little computer algorithm to adjust it. They adjusted the temperature readings from the satellites, and now they've said that there's no longer an inconsistency. Wow, because we wrote a little program to adjust it.
Now, going back to that, what I really liked about the inquiry was that one of the major points that was brought up is these Freedom of Information Act requests to basically ask for the raw data, because a lot of skeptics were like, we just want to see the raw data so we can extrapolate our own graphs and stuff. So why did they need Freedom of Information Act requests? I mean, basically, science is all about, let's try to get to the truth. So why in the world would anyone even... So, A, first what happened in these emails was, how can we stop people using the Freedom of Information Act to get our data? How can we hide the data? So let's just give them the fact that, okay... They didn't want the Freedom of Information Act there. But why should anyone even need the Freedom of Information Act to get data? They should be able to ring up the University of East Anglia and say, hey, we want this data. And they should give it to you freely, because it is about trying to find the truth. You shouldn't need the law in science, in truth scientific method. And they say, oh, no, but we've got the peer review method. Well, everybody knows the peer review method by itself can be totally manipulated.
Absolutely. Now, I encourage all of our listeners, this is actually a must, to try and listen to the House of Commons Science and Technology Committee hearings, which were broadcast and put onto the internet this week.
I mean, it's a dry listen.
Look, it's hard work. I'm going to try and actually get another version of it, because I've actually got it on my
Could
Mac.
I welcome
it's playing now.
First panel
we'll
of
just
witnesses,
have a little bit of a listen to this.
To this, a one-off evidence session on the disclosure of climate data from the Climatic Research Unit at the University of East Anglia. And welcome, through a shortage of time, Lord Lawson of Blaybay and Dr. Benny Pizer of Global Warming Policy Foundation. And to say to yourself, Lord Lawson and Dr. Pizer, that the whole purpose of this session, given the shortage of time of the committee, is to examine the events surrounding the disclosure of climate data from the Climatic Research Unit at the University of East Anglia, to examine the implications of the disclosure on scientific integrity, and to examine the independent review and the steps taken by the university since the disclosure. We're not here to discuss whether climate change is real or not. We are here to talk about what's happened at the CRU. I wonder if I could start, therefore, with you, Lord Lawson, and thank you very much indeed for coming this afternoon. The independent inquiry, which has been set up under the leadership of Sir Muir Russell, has now published its membership and the terms of reference. Do you have confidence in it? Do you think that's about right?
I sent Sir Muir Russell a letter on behalf of the Global Warming Policy Foundation. First of all, thank you very much for inviting me to this.
None at all.
Oh, look, it's too long to listen to
look,
the whole thing.
Unfortunately, I can't even pause it. The video player isn't working very well on my Mac. Well, I'll try and extract some of the bits out of it that are actually worth listening to.
And if any one of our listeners wants to, you know, I mean, go through and try to edit together a succinct little, great little video, you know, I mean, that would be doing the world a whole lot of favor because it's a dry listen, and I think
It's a dry listen with some gems in there that are actually like little interactions that occur during the 3 hours that are really worth picking out. It would be great in the context of a documentary, if someone was making a film about this, to have some of those little snippets in there as part of a documentary would be awesome.
And I think it's important to if someone's got an old school YouTube account where they can post more than 10 minutes. To post that up there as well, because
the whole lot, yeah.
Yeah, because it's got to be mirrored, because these things just go down, you know, they just disappear.
Yeah, we need to get it probably on Google.
Good to video. Mirror somewhere, yeah.
I'd just like to bring up here the next story, which is actually related to this, it's a memorandum submitted by the Institute of Physics, which is a highly respected body of scientists, which is a totally independent group, to look at the ClimateGate scandal. And their evidence was actually raised in the hearings. And the what they've said here is really quite important. I'll just read some of their findings that they've come up with in brief. The disclosure of climate data from the Climatic Research Unit at the University of East Anglia. The Institute of Physics is a scientific charity devoted to increasing the practice, understanding and application of physics. It has a worldwide membership of over 36,000 and is a leading communicator of physics-related science to all audiences, from specialists through to government and the general public. The Institute is pleased to submit its views to inform the House of Commons Science and Technology Committee's inquiry about the disclosure of climate data from the Climate Research Unit. The submission details our response to the questions listed in the call for evidence. What are the implications of the disclosures for the integrity of scientific research? That's the first question. Okay, point one. The Institute is concerned that unless the disclosed emails are proved to be forgeries or adaptations, worrying implications arise for the integrity of scientific research in this field and for the credibility of the scientific method as practiced in this context. Really, really serious criticism there. Really not to be taken lightly. Point two. The CIU emails, as published on the internet, provide prima facie evidence of determined and coordinated refusals to comply with honourable scientific traditions and freedom of information law. The principle that scientists should be willing to expose their ideas and results to independent testing and replication by others, which requires the open exchange of data, procedures and materials, is vital. The lack of compliance has been confirmed by the findings of the Information Commissioner. This extends well beyond the CIU itself. Most of the emails were exchanged with researchers in a number of other international institutions who are also involved in the formulation of the IPCC's conclusions on climate change. Point three, it is important to recognise that there are two completely different categories of data that are involved in the CIU email exchanges. One, those compiled from direct instrumental measurements of land and ocean surface temperatures, such as the CIU, GISS, and NOAA datasets, and two, historic temperature reconstructions from measurements of proxies, for example, tree rings. The second category relating to proxy reconstructions are the basis for the conclusion that 20th century warming is unprecedented. Published reconstructions may represent only a part of the raw data available and may be sensitive to the choices made and the statistical techniques used. Different choices, omissions, or statistical processes may lead to different conclusions. This possibility was evidently the reason behind some of the rejected requests for further information. In other words, If they supplied the data to these independent scientists, the independent scientists might say, well, I looked at your data and methods and I came with a different result. The emails revealed doubts as to the credibility of some of the reconstructions and raise questions as to the way in which they have been represented. For example, the apparent suppression in graphics widely used by the IPCC of proxy results for recent decades that do not agree with contemporary instrumental temperature measurements. There is also reason for concern at the intolerance to challenge displayed in the emails. This impedes the process of scientific self-correction, which is vital to the integrity of the scientific process as a whole, and not just to the research itself. In that context, those CRU emails relating to the peer review process suggest a need for a review of its adequacy and objectivity as practiced in this field and its potential vulnerability to bias or manipulation. Now, I won't read the whole thing.
Look,
but
it's all just too common. Let's just tax everybody.
Yeah.
Let's just tax it. Look, it's
yeah, look,
just
facts,
all too
facts are just too
it's
complicated.
It's obviously a hot day.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just tax everyone's breathing and you know, then we can all live on a nice little prison planet. Just stick cameras everywhere, block the internet, you know, force feed people, you know, refined sugars and spartamine.
Just keep them drinking Coke Zero and
Coke Zero, and
keep going shopping, keep watching television.
Force them to watch CSI and murder on television, and let's just. You know, that's just easier.
Look, let's just install
a dictator.
Let's just do it yourself.
Anyway,
thought we needed a bit of punctuation there.
Yeah, foil insulation checks useless, says experts. 50, 60 years into the future, this will kill people.
Oh my God! Yes, I don't seem to be able to find that story in my list for some reason.
This is one in the ABC News where electricians and insulation experts.
Oh, here it is. Yes.
Have basically just said, you know, it's this. It doesn't matter how many of these foil things get checked. 50 years, 60 years, something's going to go wrong because they're so dangerous. It's just going to cause house fires, burn people alive and all sorts of stuff, you know.
You know, I heard Peter Garrett's going to start a new band after he gets kicked out of Parliament. It's going to be called Midnight Foil. And their hit song is going to be How Can We Sleep When Our Roofs Are Burning?
Oh, you're killing me over here. So look, this is something that just happens. If you get the government just to throw around vast amounts of free money to do things. I mean,
the whole concept
plan and the business plan is there's no need for any sort of business plan, actually, because I can just have infinite money and I can just throw whatever I want around and I don't really care where the money comes from, and if it makes a loss, I don't care. And, you know, there's no real business behind it. It's just, let's just throw money at something to make jobs. This is what's going to happen. You just get fumbling con artists, scams, government pork barreling, foolish behavior. And
I mean, I really want to actually try and emphasize here the scale of the disaster of what this foil insulation is. It's bigger than what you might think. 400,000 houses, right, supposedly have to be re-inspected. But the people who are the experts are saying you can't inspect them, right, because there is no way you can know how safe it is unless you strip it all out and start again. And they've even said that if you put foil in any roof after it's been constructed, it is not inherently safe. In other words, right from the beginning, right from the very idea, it was wrong what they did. They should never have put foil in these roofs. Now, the roof in a given case might not be electrified today, but next week it might be a rat might chew through it and suddenly it's electrified. You know, there are just a thousand different things that could happen that could actually
blossoms
make... And this can happen 10, 20, 50 years into the future. Mm. What they're saying is the only way to fix it is actually to strip everything out again.
And you know, my fortune-telling ways tell me what's going to happen is they're actually... The government's just going to blame foil companies. Companies that make the foil things instead.
Yeah, and then there's another scam of inspectors who'll come around and inspect your insulation, you know, which again will be another government-funded scam. And you'll get
more
this
free
certificate.
Money. It's anyone that, you know, here's some free money. Can you come up, think of a way to take it from us, you know? And by the way, all that free money is coming from, usually from government bonds sold by the promises of income of your children.
But meanwhile, you know what, Josh? I have this from someone who talks to lawyers and people who are in the money business. It's never been harder for people to actually get loans for serious business proposals. It's practically impossible to get loans for, you know, proper, you know, business entrepreneurial proposals. While they're throwing this money around at totally ridiculous scams.
Oh, no. Schools are basically... I was talking to a friend of mine. His child's school... has got a perfectly good school hall, right? But the government gave all these money around to build school halls for every school. So they're knocking down the perfectly good school hall to build a new school hall.
it's
obscene. It's just constant ridiculousness. And this is what happens when you have free money, when you have money that's taken by force. And you don't really care. I mean, imagine, Harold, if I was just to give you a big wad of cash and say, spend it. You wouldn't really care how you spent it, would you? I mean, you wouldn't really care. You just sort of throw it around because, you know, if it was millions of dollars, you're like, oh, it just gets like, oh, just throw it around. And now imagine if I said, you know, Here's a big wad of money, don't spend it on anyone you know. Spend it on just people that you don't even know. You'd even spend it even more ridiculously because you don't care. And this is what happens with when government does things. And what I predict as well. And I'm driving around at the moment, seeing a lot of things that are happening. I mean, right now, just down the road from me, the government's building this huge extension to the bridge, right? This bridge is getting another lane. Now, this is basically just money put out there because they want to spend money, which is actually loaned, which is actually debt. It's not money that's there. It's loaned. So there's a debt on the nation for this to create jobs to make it look like, no, we're getting through this recession. So they're creating another lane on this road, on this thing, but there's no extra lane on the road coming into the bridge or coming out of the bridge. So there's just this like, oh, it's going to make traffic way better, but there's just bottlenecks on both ends. So it's an absolutely ridiculous. But I'm seeing these projects everywhere. Everywhere I look, there's cranes and things, but it's all government. It's all government jobs and government money, which is all money from the taxpayer. It's all to create, supposedly more work. But what happens when all those jobs when all those projects finish? Well, all those people lose their jobs. Now, what would happen if the government said, well, let's just tax people less. Instead of just taking all their money and creating all these fake jobs, let's tax people less. Well, what would happen? Well, people would create new businesses. People would say, hey, I've got a brilliant idea. Some entrepreneur, I've got a brilliant idea. Because I've got more money, I can actually start my business. And they, because it's a real business, it's not just government with heaps of money that doesn't really have a business plan. Because it's a real business, they're going to try and make it renewable. They're going to try and make a business that actually renews and well and works and grows instead of some project that just, boom, there it is, and boom, there it goes, it's finished, and all those people are out of a job. So it's a really ridiculous way of making jobs, but it's short term, it's quick, and that's what the Australian government has gone down to, and it's the extremities of pork barreling.
Yeah, it's it doesn't get much worse. Look, we've just about reached the end for tonight. We've done our best. We've had a good crack at this this mountain of work. Folks, please try to get to the internet protest if you can, if you're in Sydney. Try to talk about the problem with the internet to your co-workers, to your friends, to your family. Don't just bury it, you know, like it's got to be brought up. It takes a bit of an effort. You often get that kind of embarrassed sort of giggle when you bring it up because everyone goes, oh, you know, do we really want to talk about something political? And everyone gets embarrassed. This is the Australian way. It's like everyone's totally embarrassed to talk about anything political. It's even though it's like, well, it's the most natural thing in the world, isn't it? Why wouldn't you want to talk about it? Well, no one does. I mean, I've been in workplaces where really, if I wasn't talking about it, it would never get talked about.
Oh no, but you can talk about Janet Jackson's nipple.
Yeah,
exposed at the Super Bowl for months, you know.
Well, I mean,
I'm not saying our listeners do. A lot of our listeners are very active and wonderful, but
yeah,
you know, it's
and look, make a nuisance of yourself. It's okay, like you know, because you do feel slightly stigmatized. And it's like, oh, there he is. He's going on again about his bloody, you know, conspiracy theories or whatever. They'll say that, you know. But basically, you just got to laugh that off, right? Because actually, they want to hear about it. That's the other side of the coin, is that once you start bringing it up, they start to respect you for it secretly.
Yeah.
Because I get that as well. I get this secret respect, you know. It's manifest in all kinds of ways. So you just got to do it. Make a nuisance of yourself.
I'll sign the petition also.
Yeah.
Go to openinternet.com.au.
Yeah.
Sign their petition. That's the Electronic Frontiers petition. It's
important.
Also, join the Pirate Party. Very important. Leave comments on our website. Spread the website.
Spread it wide and far. Yeah.
Donate. Write things on your boat. Thank you, wonderful.
Yeah. And you will be getting your T-shirt soon. I'm a bit slack, but I'll get it out to you. Okay, folks.
Excellent.
It's been a great pleasure.